ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What happens when medicine is sold like a makeover?
Their marketing is very good.
Clinics with five-star reviews selling miracle cures.
I left that place thinking I found myself a solution.
But it's your body that pays the price.
I had one cheek higher than the other, one cheek further out from my nose.
Before and After, a new series on how medical hype spreads online, who profits and who pays. Search for Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ukraine would give up land, reduce the size of its army, relinquish weapons, and make Russian an official state language. Well, it would if it agreed to the Trump administration's reported plans to end the war. Today, Matthew Sussex, a visiting fellow at the ANU's Centre for European Studies, on the new peace proposal and how Putin is widening his aggression beyond Ukraine's borders. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Matt, to say the war rages on is so true, isn't it, when it comes to Ukraine? The Russian bombardment in recent days and weeks has been so intense, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Russia has stepped up its campaign against both Ukrainian population centres as well as its critical infrastructure.
It was at midnight when sirens across Kyiv sounded. The capital was under attack again. 430 Russian drones descended on the city of about 3 million people. It also
attacking not just Kyiv and other major Ukrainian cities in the east, but also increasingly targeting cities in the west that are closer to Poland. I suspect probably trying to send the message that Russia can hit Ukraine anywhere on Ukrainian territory.
At least 25 people have been killed, including children, in one of Russia's deadliest attacks on western Ukraine. Russia also struck energy facilities and civil infrastructure in surrounding areas.
Yeah, I mean, the neighbouring nations are becoming increasingly concerned. A Russian drone, again, in these recent days, drifted into Romanian airspace. And then, of course, NATO jets were scrambled. It's pretty concerning.
Yeah, this has happened, you know, with increasing regularity, in fact, over about the last 12 months.
Mm.
Just a short time ago, we had a number of drones entering Polish airspace and the Poles shot them down. This one in Romania seemed to really only go into its airspace for a short time, probably not giving them time enough. It's effectively Russia thumbing its nose at NATO.
Yeah, okay. Now, the other really concerning thing is the actions of a Russian spy ship off the coast of Scotland. Now, just tell me what's happened there.
Yeah, this is a ship called the Yantar, which kind of frequently hangs around the UK, but also the Mediterranean. It gathers intelligence, it sucks up resources from British and other NATO members in sort of policing it. And last year, in fact, it went through the English Channel and had to be escorted out. And the worry is that this ship is capable of doing things like sabotaging undersea infrastructure, so cutting cables, which the Russians have been increasingly doing around Europe as part of its hybrid war against the Europeans. So, yeah, there's another concerning development that the UK has to respond to.
Yeah, and that it actually used a military-grade laser to basically blind British Air Force pilots that were actually monitoring what it was doing. That's so dangerous.
It's incredibly dangerous if, in fact, that causes a plane to crash, and that means significant loss of life and almost an act of war.
Yeah, well, the UK Defence Secretary, John Healey, he's issued a warning to Moscow. He said, "We see you, we know what you're doing."
So my message to Russia and to Putin is this: we see you, we know what you're doing, and if the Yantar travels south this week, we are ready.
It comes at a time when the UK is under pressure to ramp up its defence spending. I think from the perspective of Healy, the UK Defence Secretary, it's probably also a good opportunity to communicate to the public that, well, we need to spend money on these things because we are increasingly under threat. I think he said it was a new era of hard power, and I think he's absolutely right, in which countries like the Russian Federation will increasingly throw around their military might and act in ways that are deeply concerning for the security of the UK and other NATO members too.
So, Matt, I mean, do you see this as an escalation?
Look, on the one hand, it's a further sign of Russian aggression, but on the other hand, the tempo has picked up really considerably. So I think probably the big story that came out over the last few days was this attempt to derail or blow up even trains in Poland that were carrying aid to Ukraine. And the suspicion that a number of agents were working for Moscow in putting, you know, steel clamps on rails and also even plant explosives.
Poland's Prime Minister says an explosion on a railway line used to deliver aid to Ukraine is an unprecedented act of sabotage. The railway line...
The likelihood that this is being commissioned by foreign intelligence agencies is very high, and the prosecutor's office decisions on this incident also confirm this. These events show that the people behind this have decided to begin a new phase of threatening our railway infrastructure.
This is, you know, really moving beyond just Russia flaunting international rules and norms and actually conducting sabotage activities that get very close to an act of war.
All right. Well, Matt, let's now consider what is going on the negotiating front to try and end this war. Now, senior Pentagon officials have travelled to Ukraine to discuss this, and it comes as reports began emerging of a new peace plan. Now, this is being reported by a number of news organisations, although it hasn't been confirmed by the Trump administration at this point. But what do we know about it already?
Well, look, there have been suggestions that Trump's main point man on Ukraine, Steve Witkoff, has been hammering out a proposed deal with an advisor to the Kremlin, a man called Kirill Dmitriev, around what a post-war, post-conflict situation might look like in Ukraine. And given that it's between the Americans and the Russians, that should spell very bad news for the Ukrainians. Mm. And in terms of what we know, it's mainly about the United States shifting to a Russia-favoured position, which is Ukraine needs to give up the majority, well, all of the Donetsk region, the Donbass, which it still currently has troops on, that it would have severe limitations on the types of weapon systems it could have, that it wouldn't be able to, you know, join military alliances. And effectively, it's just a restatement of Russia's preferred military goals, which it really hasn't shifted on.
Yeah, and even in some parts of Ukraine under this deal, the people would need to speak Russian.
Yes, that's right. It includes a clause that Ukraine would need to recognise Russian as an official language and also recognise the Russian Orthodox Church, which is itself problematic given that church in Russia and overseas is used basically as a proxy for political warfare. But I very much doubt that the Ukrainians will go for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the reports are it's a 28-point peace plan. It apparently is in some ways similar to the Gaza peace deal that was done. But once again, as you say, significant concessions would need to be made by Ukraine, and Volodymyr Zelensky hasn't shown any indication in the past that he's willing to do that.
No, and look, frankly, he shouldn't, unless the situation was just absolutely critical. Any agreement that says, for instance, as in this 28-point plan, that, you know, Russia should not put its forces inside a demilitarized zone and yet it's allowed to control that territory in Ukraine, well, what's to stop it? I think this is just merely a Russian-backed attempt for, you know, a peace deal which gives it the opportunity to rearm and then have another go.
Okay, well, while this sort of secret deal is being negotiated, the Ukrainian president, he has been travelling Europe to try and garner more support for Ukraine. He's also gone to Turkey in, I guess, his own bid to try and come up with a peace deal.
Ми говорили предметно і по ситуації в дипломатії, We talked substantively about the situation in diplomacy. The war must end. There is no alternative to peace. Russia must understand that there can be no reward for waging war and committing killings.
Why Turkey? What's he doing there?
Turkey is viewed as almost, even though it's a NATO member, it's not a member of the EU, almost sort of neutral ground. Now, you know, the Russians tend not to want to engage in that kind of diplomacy because they want to hammer this out mainly with the Americans. And this is, I think, the key takeaway of the second Trump administration, is that previously the Americans had hoped and tried to get Russia to move, to shift its position towards a Western one. Whereas with the Trump administration, it's all about the Americans shifting to a sort of new model of engagement with Russia, in which the war in Ukraine is important, but not as significant in terms of what the Trump administration wants to achieve with its relationship with the Kremlin.
All right, well, Matt, Donald Trump, he last held a meeting with Vladimir Putin in Alaska, of course, back in August. But, you know, these meetings to try and negotiate peace never really seem to come to anything. They leave Donald Trump frustrated, but I'm not sure if Vladimir Putin is frustrated by them.
No, I mean, certainly the meeting in Anchorage wasn't anything other than a massive PR boost for Vladimir Putin and for the Kremlin.
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, our negotiations have been held in a constructive atmosphere of mutual respect.
I believe we had a very productive meeting. There were many, many points that we agreed on, most of them, I would say, a couple of big ones that we haven't quite gotten there, but we've made some headway.
The Russians turned up, reissued basically exactly the same position that they'd had since February 2022, and then left before lunch was served. Mm. Yeah, realistically, nothing came out of that. The Russians now have been referring to the sort of spirit of Anchorage. But by that, they just basically mean that the solution or attempts to solve regional conflicts should be conducted, you know, between Moscow and what it sees as other major powers, rather than including, in this case, Ukraine, which Russia has invaded.
Yeah, I suppose the question is, does Vladimir Putin actually want to end this war? Because he's not showing any signs of that. And to have a peace deal, you need all parties on board.
Yeah, that's right. From Putin's perspective, why not just wait for potentially European countries just to, you know, run out of energy, which is why it's vital that they remain united, wait for the United States to lose interest, and at the same time, knowing that he has, you know, the superior advantage when it comes to just manpower, the ability to throw cannon fodder at the front, you know, continue grinding his way through bits of Ukraine.
Yeah, and is he gaining ground?
You look slightly. Recently, it's looked like a very key city, or what used to be a key city called Pokrovsk, in the east of Ukraine, Donetsk, was about to or has potentially fallen. This is after years and years of fighting. Now, if that's the case, then previously we would have said that that was very important in terms of logistics because it overlooked where a lot of the Ukrainian resupply effort was going. But in fact, more recently, it's become less of a strategic target and more of a symbolic one. It's become one where Putin is trying to say, well, we can take big cities and we're prepared to continue the advance into Ukraine. The military logic behind it really doesn't exist anymore because when the Russians started to encircle the city, the Ukrainians had to shift their supply lines anyway. Mm. So this is more about the sense that the Russian advance in Ukraine is inexorable and will continue no matter what.
Mm. All right. Well, Matt, Donald Trump, he did bring about a ceasefire in Gaza, but in your mind, could he actually pull this off in Ukraine? Is it at all feasible?
Look, I think it's very doubtful. I still think the incentives for both sides to continue to fight on, certainly for Putin, he hasn't changed his position really one iota and doesn't really need to because he's not under that much pressure from the Americans. Some pressure in terms of recent sanctions, but not an enormous amount. And I think his calculation is to continue to wait it out. Whereas Zelensky, you know, he's representing a country that's struggling for its survival. And it's been remarkably successful in holding up what the Russians touted as the world's second best military for years and years now. And at the current rate of advance, you know, if the Russians just keep going at the current pace, it will take them a decade to conquer all the territory that they want. So, you know, the incentive again for Ukraine is to keep going, I think.
Matthew Sussex is a visiting fellow at the Centre for European Studies at the Australian National University. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.